Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
He kōna i purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Kia ora, and welcome to Elemental, a podcast from RNZ. This is our tribute to the wonders of the periodic table, which turned 150 this year. I'm Alan Blackman from the Auckland University of Technology.
And I'm Alison Balance. And there are absolutely no prizes for guessing where this week's element got its name.
Okay, europium. There's a hint. It's named obviously after the continent of Europe. And as we will discover, it is, unlike Britain, an integral part of the EU, the European Union. But first, the basic facts. So, as we always do, europium, chemical symbol EU, atomic number 63, that again makes it another lanthanoid, and it was discovered, or first isolated, in fact, in 1901.
Tell me more about how they found it.
Those of you who have been listening to Elemental all the way through, we've done quite a few lanthanoids now, and a common feature with all the lanthanoids is their difficulty in isolation. They seem to be mixed in with all the other lanthanoids, and they're a pain to get pure. Our last episode, for example, was erbium, and that was a bit of a pain, dysprosium, all of these things. And so the story with europium started in 1803, and way back then they found an impure ore containing cerium, and cerium we've already covered on Elemental. And it took 98 years to actually isolate the europium from this particular impure ore. And over those 98 years, there was another six elements as well. And pure europium was obtained in 1901 by the wonderfully named Eugène Anatole Desmarsay. And he was actually building on work done by another great named French scientist, Paul-Émile Lecoq de Bois-Baudrin.
That sounds familiar.
Indeed. He actually isolated dysprosium, if you go back to the dysprosium episode. So he sort of said it was there, but Desmarsay gets the credit for actually isolating it.
So you've kind of said this, but like erbium and dysprosium, you don't get lumps of raw europium metal lying around, do you?
No, indeed not. So you don't get it as the free metal, but again, lots of minerals and again, coexists with lots of those lanthanoids. Now, it's relatively rare, in fact, that's unusual amongst the lanthanoids, but really, really interestingly, there's a lot of europium in moon rocks, and that's kind of interesting because that sort of argues against the Earth and the Moon having a common ancestor. One of the theories by which the Moon was formed was that the Earth was hit by something enormous, and basically that split the Moon off, and the Moon ends up going around the Earth. But were that the case, then you would expect that the elemental composition of both the Earth and the Moon should be roughly similar, and europium is a real standout element in this case.
Curious. What are its features?
Well, again, being a lanthanoid, you've heard this many times before, so the pure metal is going to react with air, it's going to react with water, and this is the most reactive, in fact, of all of the lanthanoids in this respect. So if you go and heat this to 180 degrees, it will ignite on you. So you don't want to be doing that, really. So what uses? Well, think back to good old cathode ray tube TVs, which were really not that long ago, I guess. If you look at the red phosphors in there, europium was used there. It's widely used in sort of energy-saving lamps, certainly light-emitting diodes, LEDs, those sorts of things. And one of its really fascinating applications is in glasshouses. Now, I reckon this is really, really cool. So what we find is that some compounds that contain europium can absorb light in the ultraviolet, and they can re-emit it as visible light. And the visible light that it re-emits is very, very close to the optimal wavelength for photosynthesis. And so that led somebody in Russia to think, "Ooh, okay, why don't we put films of these europium-containing compounds on glass houses? They'll absorb the ultraviolet radiation from the sunlight. they will convert it to visible light, and that should give the crops a better start to life, and it should make them grow faster, and you should get increased yields. And apparently that's what happens. So I think that's a really fascinating application of europium.
Woohoo! A novel use in gardening. Hey, now at the top of this episode, you mentioned the European Union and a connection between the EU and the element europium. What's that?
Very, very appropriate, this. So the euro banknotes, if you're familiar with those, in fact, europium is used in the ink that is used for printing euro banknotes because it undergoes, or a compound of europium undergoes, photoluminescence. And what that means is that if you illuminate it with ultraviolet light, it'll glow red. And so that is very difficult for forgers to get around, that particular property.
So europium, the forgery-busting chemical element, makes it the superhero of the lanthanoids, doesn't it? There are lots of interesting security features on New Zealand banknotes too, but I wonder if that's one of them. If anyone out there knows the answer to that, then please let us know. You can get in touch with us and the Elemental Podcast at its webpage, rnz.co.nz/chemistry.
And you can also subscribe as a podcast. Look for RNZ Elemental wherever you get your podcasts from. And we're back with fluorine in a few days' time. But until then, it's goodbye from me, Alan Blackman.
And me, Alison Balance. Thanks for your company and kia pai tō rā.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.